So there is a pasuk in Parshas Bishalach, in the section that deals with the man, where they're told to prepare from before Shabbos. Eis asher tofu efu, ve'eis asher tevashelu bashelu. They're told that that which you wish to bake on Friday for Shabbos, and that which you wish to cook, cook now. You can't do it on Shabbos. Now, the message of the pasuk is, on a simple level, very clear. Prepare your meals before Shabbos. But it's interesting that the Torah breaks down the preparation into two different forms, afia and bishul. Now, it's an interesting breakdown because on some level, what both afia and bishul, if you say that she's busy cooking now, he's busy cooking now, sorry, I shouldn't use the stereotype, you don't necessarily mean that they're cooking as opposed to baking. It means they're busy making food in the kitchen. Cooking and baking both entail the use of heat. Historically speaking, and certainly always, universally until recently, or almost universally, generated by fire, to transform food substances, to render them either edible, or maybe to render them, to make them better than they were. That's what they both entail. And one might expect that the two, in fact, are the same. Now, why exactly does the Torah distinguish between the two? And the answer might be just for literary purposes. But it really actually is a central question in many areas of halacha, the question of afia and bishul. It is particularly relevant to our discussion, but before we get to our discussion about bishul akum, which is not what the Mishnah's term is, but we'll talk about that, I wanted to touch upon how this plays out very briefly in a few other areas of halacha, and then sort of think about how it's relevant in our situation. Because this particular question, the distinction between bishul and afia, really drives a major discussion of the Rishonim at the beginning of our sugya, and it has significant ramifications for halacha. The Gemara in Shabbos, the Mishnah in Shabbos, lists the 39 malachos. And the 39 malachos, it's not sort of a random hodgepodge, it's actually a few distinct series of malachos. The first series of malacha entails, I believe, 11 separate malachos. It's known as Sidur de Pas, literally the Sidur of the bread. It starts with Charisha or Zriya, depending where in Bavel, Eretz Yisrael, and it goes through all the agricultural malachos that you would take with, let's say, wheat. And then the last two malachos are Lush, to knead, and ofe, to bake. Now, as a general rule, let's assume, certainly in the Bavli, that the malachos of Shabbos are patterned upon those things that were done in the Mishkan. Now, where was afia done in the Mishkan? The answer is in the construction of the Mishkan. It was certainly done for the weekly avoda. You had to bake the lechem haponim, but which is its own fascinating, famous machlokas between Sadiagon and some of the Rishonim. When we talk about malachas of the Mishkan, does it mean the malachas in building the Mishkan or even the malachas in doing the regular avoda? But for our purposes, let's assume that there has to be something in the building of the Mishkan that would cause something to be listed and labeled as an av malacha. So the Gemara there notes, Rapapa just comments, Amar Rapapa, Shavak Tana Didan, Bishul Samamanim Dahava B'Mishkan, V'Nokat Ofe. That was Rapapa's question. He says, I don't understand. There was Bishul, they used to cook the spices for dyes, to dye the wool, to dye the linen, but to dye the wool, and the hides, and that's where you had Bishul. And yet the Tana leaves out, doesn't say Ofe, doesn't say Lush and Mevashel. He says Lush and Ofe. Why does he talk about Ofe? The Gemara answers, Tana didan sidur de pas nakan. Our Tana is simply chosen to list the malachos following the order of making bread. Now, where the Gemara leaves it, and I think it's generally accepted, is that when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, so there's no difference between Ofe and Mevashel. They're the same av malacha. It doesn't matter whether you bake a loaf of bread or a cake, or whether or not you cook something. Either way, that is the exact same malacha. Now, so for Shabbos purposes, there is no distinction between afia and bishul. It's one and the same. Obviously, chemically speaking, physically speaking, they're slightly different, but for halachic purposes, they're identical. That would mean, in theory, the following. If I do two avos malachos on Shabbos because I don't know that they're usher, I don't know that it's usher to knead dough, I also don't know it's usher to bake dough. So I do both, and I do them b'shogeg, I have to bring two karbanos. Why? Because I violated two avos malachos, two separate avos malachos. If, however, I didn't know that it was usher to bake, and I didn't know that it was usher to cook, and I bake on Shabbos, I'm only chayav to bring one chatas, because that's the rule of how we calculate shogeg on Shabbos. Because ofa and mevashel are one and the same. The question is, how does that play elsewhere in halacha? Now, before I talk about that, I want to just talk about what is the definition, the difference between afiyah and bishul. And there are many areas halacha this matters a lot. Typically speaking, we assume that bishul entails heating food with a liquid. Typically speaking, you think about cooking pasta or cooking rice. So you put water in, you put the thing you want to cook in, and in different cases, in this case it happens, in most cases it absorbs some of the liquid. That's called bishul. Afiyah, generally speaking, tends to be something that is called, that is a dry cooking, meaning you don't have a liquid there. I mean, you have a dough, which has some liquid to start with, but basically it's a solid, and you stick it in the oven, and it, typically speaking, causes it to become more solid. That's the definition of afiyah. There is a question to what extent one actually needs fire to be directly involved in the process, or I should say in direct contact with the food in afiyah. There is a famous machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and this has an impact upon challah. Here's an example of an eretz halacha where there's a difference between bishul and afiyah. If you bake something, it's now considered bread, it's chayav and challah. If you cook something, then it may not be considered afiyah, there might not be any challah. So I don't know for sure the halacha on this, but I think that if you were to, let's say, deep fry, if you take dough as a donut, and you would actually cook it by deep frying it in oil rather than baking it, so it wouldn't be chayav and challah. If you were to bake it, then in theory it would be chayav and challah, assuming you had enough dough. There is a machlokes, interestingly enough, between baking for challah purposes entails a solid. There's a machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, what's so-called masa ilfis. What if you, in effect, put it in a frying pan? It's not liquid, certainly not enough liquid to constitute bishul, but it's not in direct contact with the fire. Is that called afiyah for the purposes of challah? In most areas of halach, I think we would call that afiyah, but so let's work with the assumption that bishul means in a liquid and afiyah means basically dry. So where else might this matter in halacha? So one area, very much underappreciated, is the issue of basar b'chalav. Why? So we know the Torah says, Lo sfashel gedi b'chalev imo, and our Masorah tells us that it refers to the cooking of any kosher behemoth's meat in a kosher behemoth's milk. It doesn't have to be the animal's offspring. It doesn't have to be the offspring in the milk itself of its mother. Now the Torah says lo sevashel. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in the first parak has a comment. It says that lo sevashel means it has to be derech bishul. Now there are a number of Rishonim, Rashi, Tosis, and the Ran, who all understand that Gemara, and I don't remember if it's explicit in the Gemara, who all state that in order to violate the Torah prohibition of bishul basar b'chalav, it has to be bishul. It can't even be frying. In other words, you have to take a liquid milk and you put meat in it, and that's the issur d'oraisa being mevashel basar b'chalav. If you were to take, for example, butter, and you were to cook meat in it, or maybe even cheese, and to cook the meat with it, that would not constitute an issur d'oraisa of bishul basar b'chalav. That is called tigun, that is called frying. It matters very much halacha l'maaseh, because you can't eat it either way, obviously. You can't even eat milk and meat together if you don't cook them. We don't even eat milk and meat, you know, after we've eaten meat, we don't eat milk for a certain amount of time. However, anything that's only asur midrabanan, it is permissible to cook, and it is permissible to get hana from, to get benefit from. You're just not allowed to eat it. So if you, for example, take venison, we assume, is only midrabanan, the prohibition of basar b'chalav, because venison comes from a chaya, it doesn't come from a behemoth, it comes from not from a goat, cow, or sheep, or one of their subspecies, but one of the chayos hakasheros, but it's not called behemoth. So you take venison and cook it in milk, you're allowed to cook it in milk, you're allowed to sell it, but you're not allowed to eat it. So in theory, if that were the case, if you were to believe that tigun is not bishul min haTorah for the purposes of bishul basar b'chalav, you'd be allowed to fry the meat in butter and to sell it to a non-Jew. You just can't eat it yourself. Now, afiyah, their achronim claim, is the exact same thing as tigun for these purposes. In order to constitute bishul, it has to be cooked in a liquid. If you were to take, I'm not sure how exactly what substance it would be that would come from milk that wouldn't be frying at some point. But if you were to somehow get something that was a kind of, I don't know, I mean, sort of cheese, and you were to cook it with meat, so according to many achronim, so it would only be an issur d'rabbanan of eating it, and it would be permissible to cook and to sell. Now, an area that doesn't come up so often, because the bottom line is, it might matter if you want to, theoretically, there are other complicating issues, but you wanted to own a restaurant that sold cheeseburgers, okay, which is you could spend a few shiurim on all the various fascinating halachic topics that come up in some great lumdus in it, but putting that aside, it would be relevant, one of the relevant issues in that discussion. Now let's talk about something that actually, I think, is a little bit relevant to at least a few times a year, which is the question of an Eruv Tavshilin. Okay, when you make an Eruv Tavshilin, so what do you usually make for an Eruv? What do you put aside for an Eruv Tavshilin?
It's matzah and
egg. You put a matzah and an egg. So why do you put a matzah and an egg?
They're not going to spoil.
No, I'm sorry. That was the perfect answer to my question. You're right. Matzah, especially, that's why we use it for the Eruv. But no, it's why a matzah. Let's say I could find something else. I could find an egg and, I don't know, a piece of American cheese. I don't think that would ever spoil.
Baked and cooked.
So you have a baked item and you have a cooked item. And the assumption is you have a baked item so that you've set aside something that indicates you started baking from before Yom Tov, so you can therefore continue on Yom Tov for Shabbos. And a cooked item, you started the bishul before. Now, why is that really necessary? So we're going to talk about Tosus here quotes a famous machlokes, Rabbeinu Tam in the Ri, whether in fact it's necessary. Whenever I make an Eruv Tavshilin, I'm a wise guy. So my wife, as I told you before, my wife explained to me that if you think that you've learned your Yoredeya and you know how to run a kosher kitchen, so you don't understand. Your Yoredeya is the accident manual. So happens go wrong. That's not how you run a kosher kitchen. So she tells me, remember to make an Eruv Tavshilin. So I just say to her, do I need to bother with the matzah? You're going to planning on baking on Yom Tov? Because certainly, if you're not planning on baking, everybody agrees, all you need is the egg. Okay, if you're going to bake, you know, when how often you're going to bake on Yom Tov? So then, you need me to set aside a matzah. And really, even if you didn't set aside the matzah, really, we paskin like the Ri that you don't need the matzah and so on. So that's an area where it's actually relevant. We're going to look at our Tosos. Before we start Tosos and then really delve into what it means in our sugya, I want to explain why am I talking about this now? What stimulates this discussion in the Rishonim right here? So we learn, if you turn back for one brief moment to the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Hamad Beis. We are actually in the bottom of Lamed Zayin Hamad Beis, but the Mishnah said, "Ve'elu dvarim shel ovdei kochavim asurin ve'eni surin isur hana." The following things of a non-Jew are prohibited, but there's no prohibition of getting benefit, you just can't eat it. And they list milk, and then they list v'hapas, bread, v'hashemen shelahem. Now I'm going to leave aside the little comment we spent a lot of time discussing about Rebbe Bestino. And then v'hashlakos. So it lists pas, then it lists something in between, and it lists shlakos. I have to say that, you know, when we talk about bishalakim, which is this noble concept, it's such a downer to talk about shlakos. What are shlakos? They're vegetables boiled in water. In fact, you might even say shlakos, shlika is really overboiling. Bishul is cooking, and to be sholik is to overboil it. Right? Now, it's particularly a downer, because when you consider, we're going to see, God willing, in September, very next Amud, the Gemara says that one of the criteria for being subject to the rules of the prohibition of bishul akum is it has to be olal shulchan malachim. Right, it has to be olal shulchan malachim lamis apas. It has to come up on a king's banquet table. The idea of, you know, the boiled broccoli. That's really inspiring. I mean, very healthy, but so it's kind of, the Mishnah lists pas and shlakos. Now, the truth is, why does the Mishnah distinguish between these two? They both mean you take food and you heat it and you prepare food and you're not allowed to eat it, presumably, we have to talk about this, the way many Rishonim say, because of chasnus, because of intermarriage. So why do I have to have two things here, pas and shlakos? It means if the guy takes food and he cooks it or bakes it, he transforms it, I'm not allowed to eat it. Why does the Mishnah break it up into two separate issues? And presumably, pas is afia, and shlakos is Bishul. This question, and especially, again, if you assume that the prohibition, the reason for the prohibition is the same as it was for Shemen, the same as it was for Stam Yenam, which is Mishum Chasnus, because of concerns of social closeness and intermarriage and so on, what I understand that Shemen is very different than Pas, and Shemen is very different than Shlakos, but Pas and Shlakos should be one and the same thing. So the question is, why does the Mishnah split it into two? And the Rishonim are going to come up with all sorts of different answers. All sorts of different answers, categorically speaking. I can think of at least three, maybe there are four totally different approaches as to how to understand why the Mishnah splits these into two. You could argue, in theory, you could argue that there's something really different about Afiyah and Bishul. You can argue that historically there were two separate sages for the Gzeira. You could argue that the two are really the same, but nonetheless the social impact of one type of food versus the other food is totally different. So the Rishonim come basically all start this discussion with the same problem, the same question, which is usually the case in every sugya, and they come up with very different kinds of answers. So what is particularly striking, let's just look at the beginning of the Gemara in Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. Now, as far as I know, every single gzeira that we have spoken about until now, in this Mishnah, right, has not been justified on the basis of a pasuk. It has been justified on the basis of a reason. In other words, because of intermarriage, because they cook it in non-kosher kelim, because they're going to substitute non-kosher milk, and so on. The Gemara opens this section three lines before it gets, the four lines get wide on the bottom of Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. V'hashlakos, minani mili. Minahani mili is essentially code word for what's the pasuk. So it's very, very strange. Right? It sounds like we think that shlakos shalakum is an issur daraisa. We want to know what the pasuk is. Amar b'chia baraba, amar Rabbi Yochanan, amar kra. So they quote Rabbi Yochanan as citing a pasuk. Ochel ba'kesef tashbireni v'chalti, umayim ba'kesef titinli v'shasisi. So this is a pasuk that's taken in the... from Parshas Devarim, we'll read it 2 weeks. I think this is from where Moshe Rabbeinu asks Sichon, Melech Heshbon, for permission for the Jewish people to pass through their land. You know, we'll be good citizens. We're not gonna, you know, trample the fields. We're gonna provide money because we're gonna buy stuff from you. We're gonna stimulate your economy. Sichon won't hear of it. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Ocha b'kesef tashbirini ve'achalti, umayim b'kesef titinli v'shasisi." So apparently, they were gonna buy food and drink their water and buy the water as well. Now, before I talk about how the Gemara wants to derive from this, I just want to point out what, as a learner of Gemara, should immediately your antennae are supposed to sort of start to pick up on signals. There's a general rule which is almost adhered to, is that you cannot learn a din del raisa from a pasuk in Nevi'im and Ksuvim. You can only learn dinim del raisa from Sukkim in the Torah. That sort of stems out of a basic approach of rabbinic theology, which is lo b'shamayim hi, that once the Torah was given, Torah is no longer given through prophecy. So Yechezkel cannot receive prophecy of halacha. We can't learn halachos from Sefer Yechezkel, from any of the Sefer in Tanakh. And that's generally adhered to. But I would sort of add another level, not on the purely theological level, is that when we learn halachos from Chumash, on the whole, I would say 99% of the time, in fact, one should expect it to be 100% of the time, it's going to be derived from verses that are actually legal material. Right? It's going to be derived from sukkim that are actually speaking about laws. And Chazal are going to engage in logical extrapolation, in interpreting extra letters or extra words where the Torah was more verbose than it would seem that it needed to be. You don't expect to learn halachos from stories in Sefer Bereishis. You might learn morals and mussar, but you don't expect to learn halachos, you know, from, and to be darshan halachos from Avram's interactions with Avimelech. Yet here, so this is Sefer Dvarim, it's not Sefer Bereishis, but it's in a story part. It's not really in a halachic section. But the Gemara tries to make an inference, which is not, it's not totally out of bounds, which is, ma mayim shelo nishtat kamayim. In other words, it has to be, in other words, ochel that you're going to buy is going to be like mayim you're going to buy. Ma mayim shelo nishtanu, af ochel shelo nishtana. Just as water, basically, water is water. What else, you know? So the food has to be like water, that it's not nishtana. An example, you want to buy fruit from a non-Jew. You want to buy vegetables from non-Jews. So he plucks it from the ground. It's the same. He doesn't do anything to it. So the Gemara is going to go on. We're not going to read further right now. The Gemara is going to go on to discuss, okay, well, you know, if that were the case, you couldn't do this. So the Gemara eventually modifies it down until finally, on the top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, just the first five words, Elamid the Rabbanon Ukra Asmach the Beyama. Now, the prohibition of Shlako Shalakum is it's an issue the Rabbanon, and the pasuk is just a peg on which to hang the din the Rabbanon, which we have frequently, but it's not really a din d'oraisa. Okay. So now the question. So this sort of even highlights the question. When it came to pas akum, it was taken as a given. I don't know if the Gemara said explicitly that it was because of chasnus, right? I don't know if the Gemara says explicitly. The Gemara says, what did Rebbe ask? Why did the Chachamim, why did they see fit to prohibit it? The Gemara said, of course they saw fit, because of chasnus. All of a sudden, the Gemara starts looking for a pasuk. It sounds like it's a totally different, even though the Gemara ultimately settles on it's not really a pasuk, sounds like it's a totally separate gezerah. So if you look at the last Tosas on our Amud, v'hashlokos minohani mili, omer Rabbeinu Tam, from the fact that the Torah asked the question about shlokos, what is the source? And even though it doesn't ultimately stand, the Gemara thought it was a din d'oraisa. Shema gzera kadmonisi, velo nigzera im hapas. Perhaps shlako shalakum, I'll call it. I may slip into anachronism and call it bishalakum, was really an ancient gzera long before pas. And that's why the Gemara, because it knew that it wasn't part of the Gzeira Pas, it was a Gzeira of great antiquity, they assumed that maybe this was in fact really a din d'oraisa. That's why the law went so far back. Ushlokos, he in yonei tavshil, kedemashma behach shmaita. Shlokos really means something that you cook, as opposed to baking, as is clear from the continuation of the sugya. The Gemara is going to say that you can't, that the definition is a bishalakum is something that can't be eaten raw, something that's olal shulchan malachim. And the Gemara is going to talk about, in the context, the guy has to have intent to do cooking. The Gemara is going to give the story, let's say a guy set fire to a field, and in the process, he killed a lot of grasshoppers. And you want to eat them. So the problem is, in the process, he cooked the grasshoppers. So the answer is, it depends on whether he had intent to cook the grasshoppers. If no intent, then there's no gzeira on bishalakum. Okay, Adrian says, yeah. All right, fine. So anyway, so Tosa says, umitchila gazru alea mitam chasnus, ve'ala pas lo gazru, mishum de lo shayach be chasnus kokach. They originally were gozer on... only on bishalakum, because they thought that entailed much more of kirav hadas. In other words, if I invite you over here, have some bread. Anything else? No, just have some bread. It's not very, that's not exactly going to endear you. It's like, you know, go to a restaurant today. You know, they have the bread and the water they put out, and they don't charge you for. But if you don't serve some nice dishes with it, so nobody's going to want to eat the bread either. So they thought originally that chasnus was only relevant by bishul. And then, achebo shamai v'hilo v'gazru b'yirchas dvarim gamala pas. And later, they would go zer on pas. Now you're going to note there's a problem though, because look at the order of the Gzeiros in the Mishnah. Pas comes first and Shlokos comes later. Sitosa says, "Ve'af al gav the masnisan tani pas mikame Shlokos." Even though in the order of the Mishnah they listed them in reverse, nonetheless, Gzeira mikol makom Shlokos Gzeira kadmonis yoser hoisa. It was a much older Gzeira. Uchashi tiru es pas. When we learned the daf ago that Rebbe, or by mistake, they permitted pas akum, pas palter at least. So lohi tiru shlokos mehai taima de pasu shlokos tremilininu. Bishalakum didn't become permissible, right? We say today, you walk into a bakery, if you know the ingredients are kosher, let's say it's an Italian bread, and we assume that Italian bread is always kosher, so you assume that we don't say, but there's a problem of pasakum. Why? Because we say that pas palter is permitted. We don't say the same thing by bishul palter. I think there is a sheet in Rishonim who says that, but we don't accept that position. So we distinguish, and the Gemara clearly doesn't say that bishul palter is mutter. So Tosa says that they didn't permit, the fact that they made a pasakum doesn't mean that they permitted shlokos shalakum. The pas ushlokos tre milininu. They're totally separate gezeros. Let's say, for historically speaking, they come at different stages because there's a reason for concern by one more than the other, and that's why they're listed in the Mishnah as two separate gezeros. Now, based upon this, the Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Nami, did Tzarech La'ariv Erev Tavshilin Bepas Ushlakos. Rabbeinu Tam says that you need, when you make an Erev Tavshilin, if you want to cook and you want to bake, you have to make two kinds of different things. Umevi Raya Midamrina Biperek Sheni de Beitza. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Ein Ofen El Ala Ofwe. Ve'ein revashkelen ela al hamavushal. Shenemar es asher tofu eifu ve'es asher tevashlu bashelum. V'chein perish pahalachos gedolos. So Rabbeinu Tam says, you see, our Mishnah is an example of something, of a case, where Bishul and Afi are two separate categories. And he said the same thing holds true by Erev Tavshilin, and he cites the Brice. It's not just that Rabbeinu Tam came up with a new idea. He points to a Brice in the Gemara that says, Ein ofen el ala ofwe, you're not allowed to bake on Yom Tov unless you're adding it onto the ofwe, that which was already baked from before Yom Tov, and Ein mevashel ela ala mevusha. Achain, his nephew, however, the Reomer, the Be'erve Tavshilin Sagi Bechad, Obepas, Obetavshil. The Rebbe said, what are you talking about? You only need one heat food prepared item from before. Ah, you'll say, Vele'ab Rabbi Eliezer, Veles Hilchasa, Kahid Rabbi Eliezer. Number one, the Shamutihu. He was excommunicated, which is a way of saying we generally don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. And number two, v'gam holech b'shitas chananya aliba de b'shamai deboi pas tavshil v'cham in tmunim. Really, Rabbi Eliezer was following in the footsteps of Chananya, who was a Tana's citation of b'shamai. B'shamai was more machmir. B'shamai believed that if you want to heat water on Yom Tov, or you want to be tomein chamin on Yom Tov for Shabbos, you want to insulate the water, you have to have been tomein chamin from before Yom Tov. You want to cook, you have to have cooked from before Yom Tov. You want to bake, you have to bake before Yom Tov. That's for b'shamai, every malach that you want to do on Yom Tov for Shabbos on the basis of an Erev Tavshilin has to be done on, you have to have done that model of Malacha from before. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer essentially is following that Shita, but we don't accept Beis Shammai's position. We paskin like Beis Hillel, Uveis Hillel Matirin, and therefore it's not an issue. And the recess further, Uvi Yushalmi the Beitza, Polig Rabbi Yoshua Behedya Alei the Rabbi Eliezer. The Yushalmi explicitly quotes Rabbi Yoshua arguing with Rabbi Eliezer. Bahachi Isa Asam. This is what the Yushalmi says. Eis Asher Tofu Efu, Veis Asher Tavashlu Bashelu. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ofen Ala Ofoi, Umavashlin Alamavushal. That's like we have in the Bavli. But Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Ofen Umavashlin Alhamavushal. You can both bake and cook with simply one cooked item. And now Tosus adds in, I don't know why he feels so strongly need to say this, but Amrinan, Bishel Sofrim Achar Halach Acharmeka, whenever it's a machlokas and a drabanon, you follow the lenient opinion. That's not really, we don't actually always do that. V'Rabbi Yeshua Mekilhu. And Rabbi Yeshua was the lenient opinion. V'o, debetalmud shalanu, Chananya alib debeis hilo, lo matzuchu elachad. Chananya himself in the Bavli says, according to Beis Hillel, you only need one food item. So the Rebbe says that basically when it comes to the issue of Erev Tavshilin, there is no distinction between Afi and Bishul. One act of food preparation, one item of food preparation suffices for all. Happens to be, Tosu says, Umihun ha'olam nahagu la'arev b'pas v'tavshil ho v'yatza ha'davar mipi halachos gedolos Rabbeinu Tam. The minhag ha'olam is to require both. Actually, I think a more powerful statement is offered by the parallel Tosus and Beitza, where the Re says, Mikomakom, even though he disagreed with Rabbeinu Tam, his uncle, he said, Lo mela'ani libi lavor al divrei dodi. I didn't have the gumption to violate the words of my uncle, Rabbeinu Tam, and it says, V'chein ama davar, and so is the minhag, that people do both. So really, mi'ikar hadin, you only need one cooked item for the Erev Tavshilin, and you can bake with that as well, but the minhag is to require both. I didn't check the Shulchan Aruch, but I wouldn't be surprised if you find poskim who say that if someone comes to the Rav and says, Rabbi, I forgot to put aside a matzah, I only put aside an egg, and I want to bake a cake, my son's birthday, and I could imagine someone saying, yes, you can be somech upon the Re, in this case, that really make good, then you don't require both. But
practically speaking, if for the egg part, we actually do an action.
Right.
For the matzah part, I pull it out of a box.
Correct. So somebody did the action already. I think that's just because matzah happens to be the kind of item that lasts a long time. The egg is not going to last as long. You can buy pre-hard-boiled eggs in the store, but I think that it's a question of convenience. If we had eggs that were irradiated and they last for 20 years sitting out on the table here, we would use those as well, right? In other words, it's more symbolic. It's sort of a reminder about Kedushas Yom Tov, and that you're cooking for Yom Tov on Yom Tov for Shabbos. only because of this particular preparation. So the merely setting it aside is sufficient as well.
Okay.
So that is as far as Erev Tavshilin. But the question is, coming back to our sugya, and this, if you want to think about the question in the following fashion, if the Chachamim had prohibited Bishul Akum, what would you have said about baking bread? In other words, if I set up the ingredients, but I do nothing other than put them in the pot, I don't start the fire, I don't stir the pot, I give it to the non-Jew to cook. So that's, you know, assuming that the food fits certain criteria, you're not allowed to eat the food. That's an issur d'rabbanan of Bishul Akum. What if I take a dough and I hand it to the non-Jew and he goes and bakes it? Now, I would have presumed, on the basis alone of Bishul Akum, I would have assumed that that falls under the same category. In other words, for some reason, the Chachamim decided that if the actual transformation of the food takes place solely at the hands of the Gentile, and some of you are probably familiar, especially Ashkenazim, are very, very makel. Like, you know, we miss the old days of the pilot lights on the stove, because if a pilot light on the stove, then it's not a problem at all. Because if a Jew even, Ashkenazim, if a Jew even lights the fire, turns on the flame, then it does away with the problem of Bishul Akum. Sfardim are more machmir on that, although I'm told that Sfardim in the United States rely upon the Ramah, this incredible Ramah, for restaurant purposes, because it would be very hard for Sfardim to find a kosher restaurant to eat in, because pretty much the restaurant, the kashrus in the restaurant industry relies upon this Ramah, the idea that the Jew lighting the fire is sufficient. In fact, if you in places that are run carefully, I remember many, many years ago, I think it was at the kosher Chinese takeout place in Fairlawn, before there was very much in Teaneck. I remember once being there, and I saw that one of the workers called the mashgiach over because the fire had gone out on one of the pots. So the mashgiach came over and he relit the fire. I would have said that baking the bread is exactly the same as cooking the food. That's what one might have thought. But that's what we have to sort of explore. So if you turn to the Rif. And I tell you where this actually matters. To me, it was shocking when I first taught. The first time I learned this, I never learned in when I learned Yoredei and Smicha. We did theoretically Shechita. I might know which side to shech the cow on, but not much more than that. And we did Basa B'cholov and Tarovas and Malicha, but we didn't do Malchalei Akum. We didn't do Pas Akum and Bishul Akum and Gevinas Akum, which now I do. I don't teach Shechita. So the first time I was preparing to teach, Pas Akum, I was totally shocked. I started reading the Beis Yosef, and I couldn't believe my eyes, because he quoted the sheet of the Ran that we're about to look at. Where is this relevant? This is very relevant because if you want to make homemade pizza, but you're in a rush, so you can go to the supermarket, and you can buy dough. You can buy pre-made pizza dough. It's not cooked, it's raw. Often it's frozen. And you take it home, you defrost it, you spread, put your cheese and your tomato sauce, and you bake it. Wonderful. Now, the question is that subject at all to the laws of Pas Akum? After all, you bake the entire thing. So the answer to the question, halacha l'maisa, ultimately is no. But when you open up the first Beis Yosef, the dealing with Pas Akum and Simen Kuf Yud Beis, you start to read the Ran and you cannot believe your eyes. I never could have imagined such a sheet existed. So now we're going to take a look at this Ran. So the Ran is on Daf Yud Gimel Amid Beis in the Dape Harif. The Ran, it's hard to miss. It says Masnisan in big letters. It's after the lines become wide again. It's about 9-10 lines down, but I think it should be bolded. On Yud Gimel Amid Beis.
The Eludvarim,
yes. Okay. So the Mishnah says, the Ran says, Elu dvarim sh'od dekochavim, asurim v'ini surnis arna, hapas v'shemen shalehem v'ashlakos. He quotes those three things. Mefurash b'gemara, she'isura shopas mishum chasnus. It's explicit in the Gemara that the prohibition of bread, pas akum, is because of intermarriage. V'shemen gamkein, shemen also, The Av Shlokos Piresh Rashi Zal Shemishum Chasner's Neser. Rashi says also the reason why they prohibited Bishlakum is Chasner's. Rashi actually quotes a different reason, one reason in the Mishnah, which is this. He quotes a different reason in the Gemara, which, God willing, in September we'll talk about. V'im Tomar, the Ran says, if that's the case, Im Kain, Amai Palginu Tana de Masnisan Lepasu Shlokos Pitarti. Why did the Tana, the Mishnah, split it into two? Hare Shnehen Mishum Bishulam Nesru Umishum Chasner's. They're both prohibited because of processing the food with heat, and they're prohibited because of chasnus, of intermarriage. That's the reason why they prohibit it. And I should add one note here. He says, Shnei Mishum Bishulan. There's one very important source that I should have started the entire discussion with. There's a famous contradiction, the biblical critics jump all over it, between Sefer Shmos and Sefer Dvarim in terms of how you prepare the Korban Pesach. In Sefer Shmos, in Parshas Bo, the Torah says quite clearly, Al tochlu mimenu na uvashel mevushal b'mayim. You may not eat from it raw or cooked in water. And yet, meaning kiyim tzliyesh, it has to be roasted in fire. You go to Sefer Dvarim, and it says in Parshas Re'eh, uvishal tavi achal tav b'makom asher yichar Hashem lekachavo. You shall cook and eat. Talking about the Korban Pesach in the beginning of Perek Tazayin, in the place that God will choose. Now, the truth. What's that? So it says uvishal tav, but it doesn't say in water, interestingly enough. But the stira stands out. The stira not only bothered Chazal, but it actually bothered Ezra HaSofer, who was the author of Divrei HaYamim, because in Divrei HaYamim already, this is a case of intra-biblical interpretation, he resolves the contradiction. It says, Vayivashlu es ha-pesach ba'esh. Rashi already points this out. It's a beautiful example. It's a rare example where you have what we call intra-biblical interpretation. Later books of the Bible already interpreting earlier books. So there already you see that you have what's really called sli or afia, dry, you know, dry roasting, cooking, and yet it's described as bishul. So the Ran here says that Pasachum and Shlakoshalakum are both Mishum Bishulan. It's a form of Bishul, of transforming through heat. And the reason for the Gzeirah is the same. Chasnus. So why does the Mishnah treat it as two separate Gzeirahs and even split it up in the list? So he says first, Yesh Lomar, you could say, Shtei Gzeirahs Havu. Talmidei V'shamei V'hilo Gozer Alpitan V'shamna Mishum Yenam Ki De'isa B'gemara D'tarveu Shaychi Bahadei Yayin V'shemen. So one Gzeirah was on Pas and Shemen, the Gemara says, were ultimately offshoots of Yayin. And then v'shemem meishu mashke kamo. Forget that. Upas mishum deshchicha milsa deachal inish v'shasi. Originally, they prohibited shemen; it was like a liquid, like wine. And they prohibited bread because you eat bread with when you drink wine. Avol al hashlokos lo gazru. They weren't gozer on the shlokos. V'asi beidina acharina v'gazru b'chol hashlokos mishum chasnas. A later Beis Din came along and said, not only bread, all shlokos, all things that you bake, we're going to prohibit because of chasnus. And now mishum hachi palginu tana de masnisan betarti, and that's why the Tana of the Mishnah splits it up as two. Now you notice, by the way, the Ran solved the problem that Tosus created by avoiding something. Remember, Tosus said two different, they would go in two different times. But what problem did Tosus create? Tosus claimed, because the Gemara tries to use a pasuk, that the Gzeirah on Shlakos had to be the earlier Gzeirah. That's why they say minon imili, and therefore the problem is, of course, that the Mishnah has it reversed. The Ran just says that there's a logic to why. Now the Gemara did say, we saw this last week or the previous week, Gazru al Yain al Pitan Vishan no Mishum Yainam. In other words, they started prohibiting first wine, first the chasnas. Then they needed to extend it to Shemin and to Pas. Right? So the Ran says, why Shemin and Pas and not Shlakos? Because Shemin is more like wine and Pas is eaten with wine, but Shlakos they didn't think was a concern. And then later Beis Din extended it even to Shlakos. So for the Ran, the two stages of the Gzeirah fit with the order of the Mishnah better than Tosfos. Conceptually, it's the same type of approach, but it solves the detail problem. But the Ran wasn't happy. Now hold on to your hats. V'li nire, shehapas shel akum, afilu shenisbas shel ayidei Yisrael, the bread, meaning the dough of a non-Jew, even if it was completely baked by a Jew, kevan shehoved kochavim, losho v'arocho, since the guy needed it, and shaped it, was orechet, umina oved kochavim hu locho, and he bought it from the guy, it was totally the guy's, osur mishum chasnus. Now, it doesn't matter if the Jew bakes it. If the goy made the dough, and notice, by the way, the Beis Yosef points out, the Ran does have one leniency here. He assumes that the goy owned the flour and the water also, because the Ran says the goy needed it, arranged it, and the Jew bought it from the goy. So he suggests that even according to the Ran, if it was the Jew's flour and water and he gave it to the non-Jew to make, that would be okay. So the Ran says, what he's saying is the gzeir of pasakum is not on baking bread. The gzeir on pasakum is really the gzeir on isas akum, on the dough of a guy. And he continues and points out, v'chi amrina b'gemara de pas shalosh malachos yeshbo. There is no such gemara, by the way. The shalosh malachos, which I think referred to lighting the fire and stirring the pot, and I think about maybe putting it on the fire. The gemara says later, in our sugya of bishalakum, if a Jew does any one of the three, it's good at least by bread. At least by bread. That's a machlokas, the Rama and the Machaber, whether it applies to all bishalakum. In other words, it's enough for the Jew to light the fire. But by bread, stoking the oven is enough if the Jew does it. So the Ran says, when the Gemara says that it's enough, even if a Jew just stokes the oven, which means he didn't, what about kneading the dough? The Ran says, and v'iofa Yisrael shari, if the Jew bakes it, it's mutter, hani mili b'pashelanu, with our dough. In other words, if we have our dough, if you give it to the guy and he cooks it entirely, that's bishalakum. It's enough, once it's the Jew's dough, if he lights the fire in the oven, if he stokes the coals once or something like that, that would be enough. If it's a Jew's isa. Sharei ein bo iser elamishum bishule akum. The only iser, if it's the Jew's dough, is that of bishalakum, like cooking any other food. The iser bishulo shall pass he tiru oso chachamim ba'achas mishalosh malachos shetainases ayde Yisrael. What the chachamim permitted, if the Jew even does a little part, any one of these three malachos, is only for the bishul akum problem of pas, for the goy cooking the bread. But for the making of the bread, avo pas shalahem, their dough, afilu nefes ayde Yisrael, asura, it's prohibited. That's why the Tana of the Mishnah splits it up into two, because they're not at all the same gzeira. The gzeira bishulakum of shlako shalakum means a guy cooks food for you. Pasakum, it doesn't mean referring to the baking of the bread. Pasakum refers to the dough. If the guy provides you with the dough, he gets the wheat, he gets the water, he kneads it, he arranges it, and he hands it to you to bake. That's pasakum. Pasakum has nothing to do with the baking. Pasakum has to do with the preparing of all the preparatory steps on the dough for the baking.
So that relates now back to frozen pizza dough?
So that's why. Now, if you held like the Ran, then frozen pizza dough, again, unless you hold that pasakum, paspalter is mutter, right? Let's say your non-Jewish neighbor made you the pizza dough. Okay, so not going to come up as often, right? It would be, she stuck it in her bread machine and hands you the dough. That would be a problem, according to the Ran. We don't paskin like the Ran. But nonetheless, according to the Ran, it would be an issue. But it's a really interesting way of reading the Mishnah. And it says that pasakum is a totally different gezerah than... What's that?
Remind me what palter
is. I'm sorry, palter is an industrial baker. In other words, we paskin that you can buy Entenmann's donuts, store, let's say, because it's commercially produced. But to buy from your neighbor who makes the same donuts with the same kosher ingredients, that the gzeir of pasakum still applies.
Listen, what about if you gave the neighbor pots?
So according to the Ran, the Beis Yosef claims, according to the Ran, if you gave the neighbor the flour, then it would be okay. In other words, it's only if the ingredients also belong to the non-Jew, and then the non-Jew prepares the dough, arranges the dough to ready it for baking, then, and it could be, you could say, I mean, the pizza dough might not be a problem because you still have to do the arrangement, but it's not clear how much that's considered arranging, just flattening the pizza dough. What exactly is the aricha? But in theory, you know, let's say your non-Jewish neighbor made the dough for you and then she stuck it on the round thing, and all you have to do is add the cheese and the tomato and whatever sauce you want and the vegetables, so that would be a problem. According to the Ran.
How does this relate to being mafrish challah? Is that at all relevant here?
The hafrashas challah is a totally separate issue. If I'm not mistaken, I'm going to say this a regular because I may be completely wrong. I would think that the...
theorizing that maybe the reason why it's not good is because no one's making mafrish challah.
So firstly, you could, if that were the only issue, like you can buy the dough from an amaretz and you have to separate stuff with the mai, right? In other words, you could institute, if you buy from the guy, you have to separate challah, number one. Number two, if a guy makes the dough, it might not even be chayiv in challah. The reason I say that, I don't know hilchas challah well enough, but there are sort of two stages in the challah. There's the lisha, and then there's the afia. And the you cannot separate challah before you do lisha. There's no hischaivus, as we would say, in challah, until you have a dough. So if you have flour and water, and you say, you know, let me separate some flour now, it's not chal. It's not chal at all. Once you make the dough, from the time you make the dough until even after you bake it, you can still separate challah. L'chatchila, we separate when it's a dough. But if you baked it already, you can still separate challah. I'm not sure, but I think that if the guy makes the dough, in fact, this is maybe an explicit drasha, that if the non-Jew makes the dough, and the shaschi of challah is when you've kneaded it, then it may be forever potter, even if the Jew bakes it. So I'm not even sure that in itself would be an issue. I just don't know for sure. It's possible if the Jew bakes it afterwards, then the chiyuv of challah could come then. Certainly if the guy baked the bread, you know, leave aside any possible gzeiros d'rabbanan, there's no chiyuv in challah at that point.
You mentioned the bread maker. The guy puts it into the bread maker. It's considered that the guy was lashed.
I see how any cans of worms are opening up. I'm going to assume for the moment, like like those poskim, even though I personally eat hand shumar matzah, that if you press the button on the machine, that's also called lishma for achilas matzah, for mitzvah matzah. So I assume that's it in this case. That's called the guy making it. you could discuss, you know, what about if it's something that's printed, you know, a printed text, doesn't have kedusha because it was printed by a computer, but I certainly assume, even if you were to say that it doesn't, I would certainly assume that a guy uses a machine, he uses a kneading pin also, right? He doesn't have to do it with his hands, right? So what difference does the machine is?
That's different.
It's his koach, yes, you're right, it's his koach, fine. So I'm going to assume that would constitute, according to the Ran, after the Ran got over the shock of watching the machine make the bread, I assume that the Ran would say that that's called Isa Shogai. That's what I would assume.
So we have printers that print bread.
Right, 3D printer. Okay, there you go. You pour the flour in, so fine. Now, as I want to go on just a little further in the Ran, I want to skip this one raya. This is, he knows it's not such a good raya. So if you skip down to... let's see, I'm going to count up from the next Big Diva Maschel, Rabbi. If you start from Rabbi, count up 10 lines. It's about 5 words into the line. I'm sorry that there's no better marker. Oh, you know what? The line below it has the gimel in parentheses to the bach. So the line right above the gimel, 5 words in, says v'hainu. The line starts with nira elele tarvayu mitzar, but I want to start with the word v'hainu. So the Ran says, based upon my principle of understanding that you're dealing with two different zeros here. One is pasachim, which is on the dough. The second one is bishulachim, which includes bread, but they had special kulos by bread, which the Ran will say, he's a Sephardi, says don't apply to all other foods other than bread. They had the special kulos that if a Jew does a small part of it, it's mutter. So the Ran says, v'hainu de b'chol haipiska de pas. We already learned the sugya pasachim on the bottom, I think, lamed heyam and beis. In that entire sugya, the Ran says, "Lo aysin an ahid Rabbi Yochanan to Amar Shalosh Malachos Yeshbo." You remember when we learned the story about Rebbe and what Rebbe did say, what he didn't say, what he thought was permitted, what wasn't permitted. The Gemara didn't say a word in the sugya pasakum about. But if the Jew does a little part of it, it's mutar. Why not? So the Ran says, "Lafisha hapasa shnuya b'mishnasenu lo mitoras bishulo." I would take out the word belvad nesar. It's not also because of the bishul part. It's also because he can't make the dough. So once you start making the dough, you're not going to talk about who lights the fire, who stokes the coals, who sticks the dough in the oven to bake. That's relevant in the discussion of our sugya, which is about bishul. The first sugya, the main sugya, pasachim, which we did already, they don't mention the shalosh malachos because they're not relevant to pasachim. They're relevant to bishul akum of bread. Pasachim is about making a dough. Aval lekaman bepiska deshlakos, the nesar bishulam shel ovdei kochavim, or the Irim beisur bishul nashal lechachavim maisinan la lefishu inyan lepas shalanu sheim ba isur elamishum bishul nashal akum. They quote it there because it's only relevant. The heter of Yisrael doing one of the three malachos is only relevant to pas shalanu, our bread, when it comes to bishul akum, the guy cooking our bread. So there, it's enough if a Jew does any one of the malachos, but pas akum is nothing to do with that. And that's why the first Gemara, which you would have expected to mention the leniency, doesn't mention it because it's not relevant to a dough. It's only relevant to the actual baking of a dough. But the baking of a dough, when the Gemara discusses, is baking our dough. Pas shel Yisrael, ayidei bishul akum. Kach nireli. That's what he says. This is what I think is correct. I'm going to skip the Ravid for the moment, because the Ravid agrees with the Ran, but for a totally different reason. He thinks the dough is a problem because of treif kalim, interestingly enough. So the Ran says that the Ravid reads a little like me, but really for a totally different reason. If you skip down now, about four lines right above Rebbe, the big Rebbe, Aval Ra'isi L'Rambamzal. He now quotes the Rambam. Aval Ra'isi L'Rambamzal, Shekzava Lahi de Gimel Malachos de Pas Stam Beperek Yudzayim Mehilchos Machalas Asuros Melochilek Bein Pasha Lanu L'Shelahem. He says the Rambam quotes the Din, Dino Pas Akum, and he quotes the Heter of the Yisrael doing one of the Gimel Malachos, and the Rambam makes no distinction between whether the dough is a Jew's dough or whether it's a guy's dough. Sounds like the Rambam doesn't hold of my idea. So what does the Rambam do with all of this? So the Ran suggests that Vafilu Lefi Dvarav Zal, he wants to explain why the Rambam, so the Rambam clearly doesn't agree with the Ran, but why? How does the Rambam explain why the Gemara does what it does? Why does the Gemara, A, why is it split up into two Gzeiros, and B, why is the discussion of the Gimel Malachos found in the Sugya Bishul Akum and not found in the original Sugya Pas Akum? So he says, Vafilu Ledvarav Zal Nire the Mishum Hochi Palginu Letarte. You know why this, the Gemara splits it up? Lefi She'ein Shavin Bedinam. They don't have the same din. Why? Shapas kol hecha deshaga Yisrael tanur ashari. If a Jew lights the fire in the oven, that's enough for the gzera pasakum. Kedamrinan ba'hu degimel malachos de lekaman, as the Gemara will say later. Ve'ilu bishar bishulei, and by all other foods, kol hecha debishel ovit kochavim, if the guy did all the cooking, afal gav deshiger Yisrael, even though the Yisrael fired the oven, aser. Now this is the Sardi position. So the Ran said, Uchmoshi isbar lefim misyata deshmayo. Umitoch shechalukim behilchoseim. Because they have different dinim, they don't have identical dinim, meaning pas, it's enough for the Jew to light the oven. For Bishul, the Jew has to be actually involved with the food. Therefore, Toch Shechalukim Bechosem, because they are distinguished within their halacha, Velo Nesru Be'inyanecha, they weren't prohibited along the same lines, Palginu Tana Demasnis and Betarti. The Torah, the Mishnah, the Tana of the Mishnah splits it into two, Afal Pi Sheshneim Mishum Bishul Nesru L'Devei Ramamzal. Even though they're both fundamentally usur, the Ramam doesn't hold of Isas Akum. He doesn't hold to the Ran's idea. But the Rambam only holds of Bishul. But the question is, but Bishul and Afi are the same thing. Why does the Mishnah split it up into two? The answer is because they have different rules. And that's why the Mishnah has to split it into two different categories. Now, the truth is, the Ran doesn't really fully explain a couple of things to the Rambam. One which I think would be difficult to explain. Which would be, I think, more easily explainable. Why the Mishnah interrupts Bishul and Pas with Shemen is not explained by the Ran according to the Rambam. In other words, for the Ran we understand that Pas Akum has nothing to do with cooking, with heat and food preparing. With final food preparation, it has to do with making a dough. So you have Pas Akum, that's one Gzera. You have Shemen Akum, that's a separate Gzera. You have Bishul Akum, which applies to bread and applies to meat and applies to all sorts of foods because that means using fire to transform the food. That's why it's two separate Gzeras. But for the Rambam, granted they have different rules and you want to list them both, but why don't you at least put Pas and Bishul next to one another? Because they're essentially the same Isser. They're an Isser of transforming the food into an edible form through heat because of chasnus, except that we're more lenient by pas than we are by bishul. So that the Ran doesn't really explain for the Rambam. He gives only a partial answer. The second thing he doesn't explain, but I think we can explain more readily, is why does the Gemara on Daf Lamed Hamad Beis, when it first talks about Pas Akum, not talk about the Gimel Malachos and the Kula within bread, but it only talks about in the Sugya later of Bishul Akum. So the answer to that question, I think, does make sense, because for the Rambam, Pas Akum is a Gzera of Bishul Akum. Now it's part. It involves the same thing with certain leniencies, and therefore in the sugya that we're about to encounter in a month from now on Lamed Chesam Beis is going to talk about what things within Bishul Akum a Jew has to do to obviate the problem of Bishul Akum. How much does the Jew have to do, and within Pas as well. In other words, there may be different details, but it's the same principle involved, that if a Jew has a certain amount of involvement in the preparation of the food, that is sufficient action to do away with the gzera. It may be different. How much is required by pas? How much is required by all other foods? And that's why the discussion is left here. The earlier sugya is really talking about not so much the gzera pasakum, but about the loosening of the gzera pasakum. It's talking about why do we permit pasakum? Why are we lenient on it? The Gemara seems to know that we're lenient on either paspalta or pasakum under certain circumstances. So the Gemara there does not at all focus upon the details of pasakum, and it doesn't because it's really more relevant to talk about when you talk about bishalakum. So there it just talks about what is truly unique about pasakum, which is that they were matir paspalta, or they were matir something, which they did not do by bishal. When it comes to the suya bishalakum, that's where the Gemara starts to talk about the details. So it talks about the details of transforming regular food into food, and it talks about the details of transforming a dough or bread into bread that can be eaten. So that's that. This is the what I talk about. To me, the shocking run. But to sort of just review and sort of encapsulate, the driver in the entire discussion is the question of the relationship between Afiyah and Bishul, which sort of jumps out in our sugya because the Mishnah lists two different gzeros, one on pas akum and one on shlakos shel akum. And if, in fact, Afiyah and Bishul are one and the same thing, so then perhaps it is one gzeira and it should have been joined together. So how does one respond to this particular issue? So one approach, perhaps, is the claim, and Rabbeinu Tam doesn't quite say it this way, is that Afiyah and Bishul are really two separate things, and therefore they had to make two separate gzeiros. Alternatively, and that's where Rabbeinu Tam says when it comes to Erev Tavshilin, you require the matzah and an egg. A second approach is to claim that historically speaking, there were two different stages to the gzeira, which the Tosus and the Ran have in two different directions. But either way, whether or not the gzeira on Pasakum came first, and only later did they institute Bishalakum, or the gzeira on Bishalakum looks like it's a deraisa almost, because mino hanimili, and only later did they prohibit Pasakum because it was in two separate gzeiros, two separate times, therefore the Mishnah lists them as two separate gzeiros. The Ran's understanding, which is answers the question in the most fundamental way, in the most radical way, is that really these are two gzeiros that not only are they might have been made separately historical and different principles, they are totally not the same gzeirah, nothing to do with one another. Pasakum is a prohibition on a dough that a non-Jew prepared, even if a Jew then goes ahead and bakes it. Whereas shlako shalakum applies to bread as well. It means a Jew owns the ingredients, whether it's the mead or the dough, whatever else, but the guy actually does the preparation through heat. So that's the second gzera. But these two gzeras are not at all like one another. According to the first two approaches, they more or less, you know, whether you really treat Bishul Afiyah separate or whether it's separate historically, they are fundamentally the same gzera. They are fundamentally the same gzera, made at two different times, or made on two different forms of food transformation. But for the Ran, they're two separate gzeras that look nothing like one another. You could never infer one if you knew the other. And finally, which really, again, conceptually in a general sense, is more like the Tosos model, is the position the Ran attributes to the Rambam, which is that the reason why they're listed as two separate gzeras is because they have two separate sets of dinim. In other words, both Pas and Bishul Akum, according to the Rambam, refer to the process of transforming the food, except that the Chachamim were much more lenient by Pas Akum, where they require, let's say, even just the Jew lighting the oven is enough, and the guy can bake all the bread in the world, and it's permissible. Whereas that leniency does not apply when it comes to shlako shel akum, and that's why the Mishnah lists as two separate gzeiros, because they have separate rules that apply to them. We happen not to paskin like the Ran. We will have more chance. I don't think in September I might mention the Ran again. I don't think when we revisit the Ran, it's a rejected shita. The more important issue halach lamaisa, which as I mentioned before, is the machlokas as far as Ashkenazim, is whether or not the leniencies of pasakum, you know, even if the Jew lights the oven, whether that applies to bishul akum as well. And that's that the Mechaber was held like Chachmei Sfarad. You can see the Rambam, who held that those leniencies do not apply, but the Ramah, following sort of later traditions in Ashkenaz, was very makil, and that is the practice in Ashkenaz ad Hayom Hazeh.
I wasn't here when you originally explained the Chasnas part, previous weeks. Mm-hmm. But if you have two Gzeres that are essentially because of Chasnas, when we analyze the two Gzeres, rather than looking at the two food products and how they're different, why don't we look at how this food leads to Chasnas and that food leads to Chasnas?
So I think that what you actually see in the Rishonim is they do sort of discuss that issue. Now, there's the assumption that, you know, the... you know, the way, let's say, the Balei Hato, the way the Ran describes it, is that people thought that initially only... the way Tosus describes it, they thought initially that Bishul Akum would lead to Kiruv Hadas, but Pas is different. In other words, I think the assumption of all of these things is that these things sort of are the social lubricant, right? They create greater social interaction. And there are distinctions. The question is, you know, what is the difference between, you know, you can understand why drinking wine is worse, right? Because not only is there a cure of adas because you use a glass of wine, but you lose your mind in the process potentially as well, right? You become intoxicated. And then, you know, how big of a service has he done? How much do I enjoy what he does? Well, shalako shalakum, you know, you have a lot of different delicacies. Bread is, you know, the basic staple, right? So I think they do sort of address that question. They are thinking about that in the background, but I think there's still a common denominator to all the chasnos, which is, I think every gzeir of chasnos is about food, and we know this, if you want to create a separate community, don't eat somebody else's food. That's the, you know, the simple way of driving a wedge. And so I think that even though there are different degrees and a little bit slightly different effects of that, I think that the overall picture still is one and the same.
And in terms of chasnos, what if we, like Avraham Avinu, serve them? I'm opening up a tent. Come and eat in my house.
You mean like Chabad?
Why is there a concern?
So the assumption I would say is the following. Theoretically, you might be concerned that it's an odd kind of circumstance, but I don't think Chazal had to make that gezeira because it is socially uncomfortable if I will give you my food, but I won't eat your food. Right? So I don't think you need to go down that road, A. And B, I suspect, but here you have to ask really someone, a psychologist or an anthropologist, is what is the effect, what is the Avraham Avinu effect? Chazal certainly perceived that as not they were influencing Avraham, but if I am always the giver in that context, I'm selling something, in effect, right? You're taking the food, and what you're getting in exchange is you get my spiel. I would imagine... What? I understand, but in other words, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? You get a free lunch, it's because someone wants to make a pitch to you. So that's what Avraham Avinu's Eishel... I mean, we assume it was done out of pure chesed, but what was, in theory, if Avraham was getting something else, it was sort of selling the Ribbono Shalom to them. So I think that when it's a one-way street, both is a media impact, and even the ability to sort of create that social interaction, if you won't eat their food, I think it becomes a very different dynamic. Okay.